Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. The Downtown Jamaica Jazz Festival is go, May 14th and 15th at the Jamaica Performing Arts Center in Jamaica, New York. Performers include the Jonathan Blake Quartet and drummer Marcus Gilmore. For more information, jcal.org. The Chris Parker Septet performs tomorrow, May 6th, 8 p.m. at William and Helen Richards Theater at Orange Hall at SUNY Orange in Middletown, New York. This event honors professor, composer, and pianist Chris Parker, who is retiring from teaching music and leading the jazz studies program at the university. For more information, suny.edu/cultural affairs. Upcoming events in Chicago, Illinois. Tonight, May 5th at Constellation, the groups Kind Folk and Twin Talk. For more information, constellation-chicago.com. At Elastic, the Stein-Spencer Duo, and the Myth Chamber Experiment. For more information, elasticarts.org. And tomorrow night, May 6th at the Logan Center Performance Hall at the University of Chicago, the ensemble Ghosts Go Everywhere I Go, that includes pianist Vijay Iyer, flutist Nicole Mitchell, and bassist Nick Dunstan. For more information, artschicago.edu. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Theater tonight, May 5th, vocalist Lauren Henderson and her quartet. May 6th through 8th, the Steve Slagle Band. And on Monday, May 9th, vocalist Mafalda Minozzi. And inside of Birdland Jazz Club on Saturday, May 7th, solo piano by Bill Charlop. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Two upcoming events at Carnegie Hall in New York City. Grammy Award-winning pianist and bandleader John Batiste with the Carnegie Hall-commissioned American Symphony, honoring the works of musical visionaries including Duke Ellington and Nina Simone, on Saturday, May 7th. And, for the love of Ron Carter and Friends, a celebration of the 85th birthday of Grammy-winning bassist, composer, and educator Ron Carter, on Tuesday, May 10th. The speakers will be NEA Jazz Masters bassist Stanley Clark and Buster Williams, with appearances by Carter's Golden Striker Trio, the Ron Carter Foresight Quartet, and the Ron Carter Octet. For more information, carnegiehall.org. Pianist Joey Alexander, whose new Mac Avenue release Origins is out this month, plays at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek, California, tomorrow, May 6th, and Kumbwa Jazz in Santa Cruz, California, on Saturday, May 7th. For more information, joeyalexandermusic.net. The Roy Hargrove Big Band continues its residency at the Jazz Gallery in New York City tonight. And tomorrow night, the G.A. Lee Orchestra. For more information, jazzgallery.org. Tonight, May 5th, at the Bearsville Jazz Club in Woodstock, New York, guitarist Luke Franco and his quartet for a 7 p.m. show. And on Mother's Day, Sunday, May 8th, Vocalist Terry Rozier and her quartet performed during the jazz brunch at the club. For more information, bearsvilletheater.com/jazz. This Friday and Saturday night, May 6th and 7th at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, saxophonist Scott Robinson and his quartet for two sets. And on Mother's Day, Sunday, May 8th for two sets, vocalist Stephanie Nakazian and her trio. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. Vibraphonist Joel Ross performs at Capitol Bop in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, May 7th, and at the Creative Alliance in Baltimore, Maryland on Mother's Day, Sunday, May 8th. For more information, iplayvibes.com. And now for new releases. Coming out tomorrow, Friday, May 6th, drummer Anthony Fung with his independent release, What Does It Mean to Be Free? Saxophonist David Binney's Tomorrow's Journey on Ghost Note. Trumpeter Michael Sarian's self-release, After the Rain, Impressions on Daily Sounds and Field Recordings During a Moment of Rebirth and Awakening. And pianist Ariane Rassicot's Envolée on Multiple Chord Music. Other new releases, the band San Gabriel 7 featuring vocalist Sina E with their self-release, Under the Stars. Pianist Steve Boudreau's self-release, Cherished Possessions. Drummer Francisco Mela and pianist Xenia Lin's Motion Volume 1 on 577. And reed player Aaron Arenata and Eastbound's Connection on Sugartown. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hey, Ryan.
How are you?
I'm good. How's that puppy?
Yeah, it's Mickey. She's good. She likes to sit next to me all day.
Oh, and here comes Mr. Feinberg. Here he comes. Mr. Feinberg. Hello.
Hello.
I'm assuming you two have met.
I don't think so, no.
Oh, yeah, seriously?
Emails.
Yeah.
Not directly, yeah.
Wow. And to think I brought you two together, it's meaningful to me.
That's the way it goes these days. It's meaningful to us. Thank you.
My guests are Ryan Patternight, the managing partner of Birdland Jazz Club and Birdland Theater in New York City, and Jason Feinberg, senior vice president of marketing of Fly Machine, a pioneering virtual venue space for live entertainment. So I want to thank you both for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
So why don't we start off with the question of what events necessitated the collaboration between Birdland and Fly Machine? Ryan, would you like to start off?
Yeah, we at Birdland started streaming shows during the lockdown phase of COVID. But at the time, nobody was open and artists weren't performing, so it was a bit of a novelty. And we were looking for ways to continue that. And we were recording shows and then editing them and adding title sequences. And it was more of a prepackaged production. It wasn't a live stream per se, although the delivery to the viewers was ultimately streaming. And then I have some very old friends, Tom Ewald and Ali McLeod and Andrew Dreskin, who's the founder of Fly Machine, also was the founder of Ticketfly and Ticketweb, I think. And so I've known and worked with them for years. I was a founding client in Ticketfly. So when they launched this new venture, I said, that sounds like some people that I want to work with. Little did I know the technology they had developed which is pretty interesting.
And Jason.
I mean, from our vantage point, you know, we are so excited to work with venues across the country. And, you know, I mean, one of the most legendary, of course, Birdland. How could we not be excited about that? And, you know, what our platform is really focused on is enabling shared experiences and community over a virtual event. And I mean, there's hardly any community more connected and excited to be together than the jazz community and you know, similar genres. And then the spirit of that, you know, seeing the audience and the affinity for Birdland and the connectivity there, it's such a natural fit for the experience that we try to bring. So, you know, it was a no-brainer from our side, that's for sure. Mm.
So Ryan, how does one purchase a virtual ticket through the Birdland website?
Our website is birdlandjazz.com, and in our list of events, which is the calendar section, all of the virtual events are listed, and those will take you to Fly Machine to buy a ticket. And there are individual links to each of the shows as well. It's usually fly.live/whatever the artist's name is. For example, we're streaming a show with Bill Charlap next week, and that's fly.live/Charlap.
Cool. Jason, let me ask you about this, since you are part of Fly Machine. What happens when you've entered a virtual performance at Birdland? Is there a pre-recorded voice that welcomes me and tells me who's performing?
There's a few ways that can go. When you first log in, we give you a quick tutorial video about just using the product and what you're in for, how to connect with other fans, if you want to create a private experience for you to watch with your friends or family. Once you get past that and you're actually in the venue, you're seeing what is being broadcast from the venue. And there's a lot of options there. You could simply see the audience waiting and sort of the energy in the room building. Or you could see a pre-roll material. So if there were any videos that wanted to be played leading into the performance, that's something that can also happen. So it's really a very flexible experience, just depending on the artist that night and then what Birdland wants to project as far as the evening.
Okay. Now, I want to be close to the stage, or I want to be closer to the bar so I can get my drinks quicker. Are there different seatings in a virtual room?
So there's yes and no. It really comes down to Ryan and the great production team at the club, right? The angles, the camera work that's happening for the broadcast. In regards to the quote unquote seating within the Fly Machine platform, there's a few ways it can happen. If you simply log in and you start watching the show, the entire interface fades away and you're just watching this beautifully produced live stream. But if you want to join a public room or a private room to watch with other fans or friends and family, now you're seeing on the screen at the same time the video of the people you're watching with. And so you're sort of almost sitting at a table, so to speak, with them in the corner of the screen, while the rest of the screen is the live performance. And so as the camera angles switch, you're getting that really optimal view. So you kind of get it all. You get up close as if you're almost on the stage. You get back of the room so you can see the entire venue. And then anything else that the producers that night decide is a really high quality look.
Okay. And Ryan, are there price differences with where you sit, just as you would in a live setting in the club?
No, it's one admission price. And to be put a little finer point on what you see, or in terms of different seating areas, everyone who's watching the show via Fly Machine is seeing the same thing, the same video. The only part that you're curating as a fan yourself is who you want to be surrounded with in sort of the foreground of the live venue. So when you go on and watch a show, there's little bubbles on the screen. You have your camera, just like a Zoom call. And you can see your friends' faces in a little bubble, and you have a little slider that controls if you can hear them talking or you can hear the show, the volume, the mix between the two volumes. So that's the part that you're curating as a viewer. But the show, you're seeing what I'm directing from the five cameras and the lighting and the sound in the club.
And we can also chat?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, wow. That's sweet.
With microphone or with keyboard.
And we don't have to wear pants, do we?
Not at all. Unless you know, just keep your camera focused high enough.
That's good advice. So at the end of a performance, can a virtual audience give feedback? How do you take the feedback?
There's a few ways. The first is that the fans can hang out after the show and keep talking to each other on the platform. And we've even had artists then join these rooms and talk to fans afterwards. You know, it's something where it's obviously up to the artist if they'd like to do that, but it's very easy for them to join and, you know, sort of hang out as part of the experience. In addition, I mean, we, after the event, we ask fans, we poll the fans on their experience. We send out a survey and we get incredible response to this. People really, I mean, one of the quotes around one of the shows we did at Birdland with Coco Peru is, I felt like I had a front row seat, right? So we're getting these great pieces of feedback that, you know, the fans really feel like they saw something special.
Ryan, did you want to add anything to that?
The feedback part has been interesting because it's a lot different experience. It's still a different experience than being in the club in person, but it's different in an interesting and unique way. And sometimes it can be, I don't want to say better, because there's nothing better than sitting next to, you know, a drum kit in a live show. But you can see angles. We have cameras on the stage from a reverse angle. So sometimes you're seeing the artist from the other side that the audience can't see, and the audience is in the background. So we've gotten a lot of feedback that, like Jason just said, that it was something different, something unexpected. And like he said, people have met each other at the shows virtually with their little bubble on the screen and stayed and chatted for a long time afterwards until we have to just shut it down because we're closing our doors in real life.
Right.
It's exciting to see some of that conversation afterwards where you get fans self-organizing. And so they might form a room from the city they're in. And so other fans from that city will find each other and they make friends. And then you see at the end, they're exchanging their Instagram handles, for example. And now they're following each other, you know, outside in the real world. And, you know, hopefully, you know, community forms from that.
And what's been the general feedback from performers about virtual audiences?
I've gotten 99% positive feedback from performers. Now, Jason mentioned Miss Coco Peru, who's I don't know how she likes to be referred to, but a drag artist and, you know, well-known around the world for that. And she hates cameras. And she was very, very aware of there being cameras in the club at the time that we did it. In fact, we kind of jury-rigged, you know, pieces of tape and stuff to cover the tally lights. So to minimize that feeling for her. But she said after the show, the feedback she got from her fans was that especially she had a particular very, very close friend and fan in Los Angeles who had, I think, you know, some kind of Crohn's disease, I think, and was really, really unable to leave her apartment for any stretch of time. And so this was the only way she was going to see Miss Coco's new show. And so she was really touched that was possible. And other artists are totally on board with it. They love it. Maria Schneider Orchestra, for example, she's well into the idea of streaming, and she loves the fact that she can reach people all over the world. I think the people from Fly Machine told me that there were more fans from Asia, Japan specifically, for Maria Schneider Orchestra than any other performance that they've produced. So, you know, that's a great thing. And the artists earn extra money, the composers earn extra money, and the club earns extra money. And what can be bad?
And it's, you know, I want to double click on some of the regional things that Ryan was referring to. I mean, this is one of the things we hear all the time from artists and fans alike, is that, you know, if I live in Japan, I can maybe get to New York occasionally, but the ability to live in Japan and watch multiple shows from this club that I love, you know, that's very meaningful to people. And I mean, that show, we had fans from the US, Japan, Canada, Australia, UK, Spain, it goes on and on. And we see that on almost every show. And that's a lot of the feedback we get from the artists, is they're glad that their global fan base can experience a live show, even if they can't be there in person. And then from the fans, we see that every single time we do a survey, or even just watching the chat in the room, people that whether they can't get their from a geography standpoint, it's cost prohibitive, whatever the reason is, the babysitter canceled. And so they get to see the show and, you know, still they don't miss it. There's all these reasons why we get a lot of really positive feedback.
I should mention, Cheryl, also that Fly Machine is rolling out new features all the time. And we incorporate those as they become available to us. And one of the things, and it's the most requested as far as I'm concerned, is that people be able to watch the show on a replay, you know, for a certain period of time after the live show. And that's coming very soon, later in May. So we're excited about that. And from that point that becomes available, all of the Birdland shows will be able to be viewed live and on repeat for 72 hours afterward.
Jason, who else is Fly Machine working with in jazz?
Trying to think, what are some other good examples there? I mean, in jazz, we have relationships with clubs across the country of every genre. I think Birdland is certainly the dominant one where we've really focused in jazz. So, you know, what you're seeing come out of Birdland is really our primary focus there. As you mentioned, the Maria Schneider Orchestra was a great one. Frank Vignola Guitar Night is another one.
Oh, that we're on Wednesdays, with. Right.
Yeah. And that's been a great one because, you know, that move from YouTube where it's live with a chat feed of text to now a much more communal and engaging experience with audio and video. And the feedback seems to be really positive there as well.
A lot of regulars for that show, people who tune in every week. But I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Jason, you've had other jazz shows, but as far as jazz venues, we're pretty much exclusive at this point.
Correct.
Not to say you couldn't add more in the future, but it's, the platform is still technically in beta. So even though there are dozens of venues around the country, each venue represents a different style of music.
Correct.
Ryan, for those of us returning to New York City in the coming months and looking forward to live music once again, what has changed at Birdland Jazz Club and Theater that we need to know about pre-pandemic?
You know, that's an evolving answer, because right now I would say that it feels pretty much the same as it did before. In fact, I'll say hesitantly that it's been busier so far in 2022 than it was in 2019, which was our biggest year in business prior to the pandemic. So, and I don't know exactly. I mean, we survey people to some extent where they're coming from, but we don't take, you know, detailed information from everyone. But my question is, where are they coming from? I don't know. I don't think they're coming from Europe and Asia as much because there are still travel restrictions. But I think because it's still somewhat risky for Americans to travel abroad, that we're getting a lot of tourists from different parts of the United States. I've heard stories from friends where they travel to France, say, for spring break, and one of their kids tests positive. So one of the parents and the kid has to stay together in France at their own expense longer than they anticipated. Mm. Like that's a tough thing to deal with. So whereas you can travel to New York and have, you know, few to no restrictions and pretty much experience life the way it was. Now, I know when you go to a Broadway show, you still, they're requiring masks and checking your vaccine cards, and that's all fine. So that feels a little different. I've been to a couple Broadway shows myself, and it's definitely, I would have to say, slightly less enjoyable. But, at Birdland, we have been checking the vaccine cards up until just very recently when the city lifted those restrictions. So now we just advise people to do what makes them comfortable, which could mean stay home or come to the show and wear a mask or not. But I think that it's there have been very, 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 very few problems. The last, you know, staff member, for example, who got COVID is months behind us at this point.
But pants are still in place.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
What is it with me in pants? I don't know.
You're just used to that Zoom life.
That's right. So, gentlemen, we are coming to the end of this interview, and I want to give you both the last word. Is there a question I haven't asked that you like to answer? Is there some information that you'd like to put out there for all of us to know? Jason, we'll start with you.
Sure. I think what I really want to highlight here is the appreciation that we have of Birdland working with us on this platform. I mean, they have been incredible in testing features, you know, really leaning in, making great productions. And as Ryan said, we're releasing features all the time. We're still, you know, coming out of beta and really firming up the platform. And, you know, in addition to the genres and the artists they feature that are innovative and progressive, I think the club and the producers and the team there really take an innovative approach to how they get these shows out to the world. You know, they seem to believe in the product, and, you know, we've really enjoyed the partnership, and we're excited to see, you know, where we can take it from here.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would say, you know, I would say for people who are not sure if this is the right thing for them, just give it a shot. Our lowest price show is $5. Now, I don't know about you, but I think that's a pretty small risk. I mean, I see people lined up at Starbucks every day, and you know they're spending more than that for a cup of coffee. So this, you're getting world-class artists from the jazz corner of the world, Birdland. And I would say if you're not sure, give it a shot and see how you like it. I think you're going to find that it's something a little different. And if you think that watching a streaming show is sitting in front of your laptop with, you know, in kind of in less than ideal environment, give it a shot, because you can interact with people. You're seeing an audio video production from Birdland that's, I think, far beyond what other venues are producing. And I think you'll like it. So go to birdlandjazz.com, sign up for our email list, and we'll tell you about all the new upcoming productions. At flymachine.com, you can see all the upcoming shows from venues around the world, or around the country, excuse me. It's not global yet.
But it's work. It's getting there.
Yep, I hope so.
For more information, birdlandjazz.com and flymachine.com. And now for some music.
Thank you. you said, if we connect, we could make good company. It's the love effect that we respect. We could make good company. Young and blessed, don't pay no mess. Here in the yard, life in excess. Live our best, be who we are. Everybody needs somebody just like you. Everybody needs somebody to be true.
Making his appearance at this year's New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival this Saturday, May 8th, Trombone Shorty. We just heard Good Company from Lifted, his new release on Blue Note Records. From the liner notes by Trombone Shorty, this record would not have been possible without everything I learned from my mother, Lewis Nelson Andrews. She is my inspiration and my teacher in keeping the culture and spirit of Treme alive. And before that, from tenor saxophonist Mark Turner. His new release that came out in March on ECM Records is titled Return from the Stars, and we heard the title tune. Turner is accompanied by Jason Palmer on trumpet, Joe Martin on double bass, and Jonathan Pinson on drums. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com. info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with saxophonist and composer Fabien Willman. His release, Balance, is his debut release on the new Swiss label, Clap Your Hands. I want to thank you for joining me on Situation Fluxus. On your debut release with bassist Arne Huber and drummer Jeff Ballard, you include saxophonist Asger Nissen
on 3 of the 7 compositions. Did you initially write for a second voice?
That's kind of true, actually. I usually write for like 3-part voicings. And then for some of the songs, or the idea I had for the band was a trio, so I had to leave out some of the voices, I guess. But yeah, initially, most of the songs I write for is like for 3 lines.
For 3 lines. And how did you come to choose Asger?
I met him in Berlin, where I just recently moved to. And He's like this young guy, maybe he's like 20 now, just slaying away on the alto sax. Like like one of these like prodigies that you meet a certain time. But he's also a super musical player, and I really like his like aesthetic. And when I thought about the band, I thought it would be cool to include someone not only older than me, but also younger than me.
One of the people you thank in the liner notes of Balance is fellow saxophonist Mark Turner, who you studied with at New York University. Was it through him that you met Jeff Ballard, someone he's recorded with?
I think it was actually unrelated, but they do both teach in Basel in Switzerland, which is the music academy that I started studying at. So that's where I met both of them. I just used to play in like a lot of the bands of Jeff's students, like his drum students, I think. And like whenever they had an exam or like the final exam, usually maybe you would get like a beer afterwards. So we'll hang out with Jeff for a little bit. And I think at some point he was like starting to recognize me, like, this guy again. Like,
why is he following me?
Exactly. At a later point in the night, I think he just like, maybe it was just like being polite. He said like, yeah, man, if you ever need a drummer like for a gig, just like give me a call. I was like, haha, I'm gonna remember that.
And so, you did.
I did remember when it was time, when I thought it was time to like record the first album under my name. I was just like thinking, who could I call with like the best drummer I know? And then I guess it was Jeff.
Who do you feel took the bigger gamble? A new label, clap your hands, working the debut release of an artist, or you working with a new label?
Good question. But the good thing was that going into this, we like the founders of the label and myself, we know each other for many years. So they kind of know me and I know them. And I was very confident that they will like start this project and be super professional and very involved in the whole process. And it's like a long-term operation that they're setting up now with Clap Your Hands, the label. I think the new Marilyn Mazur album is going to be released. A bunch of cool releases coming up. So I was pretty confident that it would be a cool experience for me. And I guess since I was playing in Zara Haxad's band, she's one of the co-founders of the label, she also was kind of knew what she was getting into. And actually she was the one like always telling me like, hey, when do you finally release like your solo record, like your under like as a your debut as a leader, because I did play in a bunch of different bands and recorded a few albums, released them, but never under my own name. So when it was when I came to the point of like, okay, now I want to release something under my own name, it only was like the natural choice to go with the one that always pressured me to do so.
Thank you.
I watched the 7 videos that you made with filmmaker Kevin Sepp. They're available on YouTube at jazzthing.tv. What was behind the series? What was the idea?
Yeah, the series is actually called Idee, which is like German for idea. Oh. So it was just we did the first like mini season, I guess it was called Vacuum, like just like in the beginning of the pandemic, and in a bunch of different spaces in Berlin, all empty, like no people there. I was just like trying to find a space for music and for performance. And the second one was like the idea season, those 7 videos we were talking about, that it was about like bringing it out to the people again, like traveling different places. We went to Athens and we were hiking in the mountains, just like finding new space for music in a society that's only like coming back from the pandemic and trying to like find a place or like a more unique places for music in the process of starting back up, like the creative process.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. Is there going to be a second series?
We're planning the next season already, but it's always a bit of a balance between how much, if we can get a little bit of funding, maybe how the schedules align. But we have 2 different projects like in our heads. One is going to be like a musical journey throughout Eastern Europe, where we have like 7 collaborations with artists, dancers, yeah, musicians in the respective country, and trying to find like places that only the locals would know, like mm-hmm. some village in a mountain somewhere, or the dance studio of a collective in Budapest or whatever. So that would be really interesting, just like, yeah, to go one step further and interact with other artists as well.
Maybe we could see you making breakfast.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that.
Okay.
I'm always looking for new ways to scramble eggs. So
this could be like my second channel, I guess.
Your cooking channel, exactly. Fabienne, I had a wonderful music education from my primary grades throughout high school. What do you appreciate now about your music education?
I was always also very lucky to start in an early age getting like piano lessons when I was 6. And then, I mean, not so lucky in the sense that my grandfather, he was also a saxophone player. And when he died, there were a lot of instruments available. So I was lucky enough to get the instruments. Obviously, I would have preferred if my granddad stayed alive. But that's how I came to playing the saxophone. And that like really spoke to me. In the sense that like with piano, I was always struggling the different lines, I mean, fingers, and on saxophone, I could just like have like this streamlined, like this stream of conscience where I could just let out what I was feeling. And initially I only had classical lessons and a classical education, but once you've played like through those maybe 3 concertos that they are for classical saxophone, I went to a music, like a high school with a focus on music, and I met a great music teacher there who got me into jazz. Or like he was leading the school big band, and yeah, that was probably the most influential at an early age. And I mean, yeah, I did have good teachers throughout that were encouraging me, and although I didn't practice that much, still like kept me going, and eventually I started practicing. So I guess it wasn't for nothing.
When did you pick up clarinet? Was it before college or after college started?
I only played saxophone, but I did have some auto clarinets that used to belong to my granddad, so I was always lucky to like be set up with an instrument at least. But then yeah, I had to practice it.
practice.
Yeah.
It gets in the way of the fun.
I mean, it can. If practicing is fun, then that's obviously the best.
Yeah.
And it can be fun for sure.
So Fabienne, in coming to the end of this interview, I'd like to give it to you. If there's a question I did not ask you, if there's something you'd like to tell us about the release or an upcoming project, please.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I guess like the overall theme of the album, which is called Balance. That's something I'm always interested in, and I thought would be interesting to explore musically. I was trying to write like really simple compositions, simple structures, to allow the interpretation to be really free and like take liberties in the approach to the performance and the recording of the music. Because I always felt like if the compositions are really complicated, then best case scenario, you just execute them perfectly, and that's going to be as good as you expected, or maybe a little bit less good if there's a mistake. But if you write like really simple music, which is also hard, like to just boil it down to the very basics, you get to shape the music and transform it in a moment. And I was trying to give this kind of freedom to myself, but also to the players I asked, Anna Huber on bass and Jeff Bella, because I knew like they would give something to the music that I can't compose, I can't write. And in the end, yeah, it exceeded my expectations, which I think is a beautiful thing. And I was very happy that it worked out, and feel very fortunate to play with those guys that are more experienced than I am.
Anything coming up we need to know about?
We just had our two release concerts in Switzerland and Germany that also went well. And like, so the next 3 weeks, I'm just touring with a bunch of different bands. If you're in the German or Swiss area, I'll be probably passing through with either a pop band or some like a big band, the Sarah Schachsatz band. We're going to play some festivals soon, a large ensemble as well. And yeah, if you want to find more about like the schedule, you can always go to www.fabianwillman.com.
More information, FabianWillman.com. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host the Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.